This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
The University of the Third Age, or U3A, organise a series of talks Wednesday afternoons in the public library here in Palmerston North. The theme of the talks for 2025 was volunteering. Manawatu People's Radio was on hand to provide audio engineering services and record the audio for broadcast. Here's this week's episode.
The joy of volunteering. I've had extensive experience as a volunteer, starting as a brownie, which was after the ride down the thing, with numerous organisations including Abbeyfield, Strive and Rotary. Much of this is an administration capacity as well as being house manager for Roslyn, for Abbeyfield and Roslyn for about 8 years. I'll later in the talk go into detail with these three organisations, how I work with them and how different they are. Volunteering offers many rewards in terms of community involvement, proposed activities and mental stipulation. So the J for joy. Also causes joy when you feel good about volunteering. The people who you volunteer with love receiving it, and that gives them joy. Juniors, the J for is the brownies, guides, scouts, with a number of young children as first volunteers, and there you'll find quite a few children who volunteer young in life go on to be a volunteer. I'm sure you'll remember the days when the brownies were knocked on the door with their biscuits. That sort of's gone to by the board now. And this goes right through to seniors. One of the residents is Abbeyfield. He's a volunteer at the Volunteer Centre, as well as at the Rugby Museum, and he does jigsaw puzzles for the library here, so when you get a jigsaw puzzle out, all the bits are there. And it's unbelievable, it only takes about a week, it doesn't matter how big the jigsaw puzzle, he does that. Oh, for organisations. During this talk I'll discuss a few organisations that prosper due to volunteers. There are far too many to talk about them all. And the why is yourself enjoying what you're doing. Another volunteer that gives to a dementia unit, my daughter works in a dementia unit, I said to her, do you have volunteers? And she said, yes, little dogs. And they come in and the residents absolutely love them and the dogs just love being there. I just found a couple of quotes. This one, as you grow older, if you can't read it, as you grow older, you'll discover that you have two hands, one for helping yourself, the others for helping others, from Audrey Hepburn. Sure, we're all old enough to know her. Well, what have I done? Okay. As I said, I've had extensive experience as a volunteer with numerous organisations, and these ones, and I'll talk about how volunteers contribute and what is achieved by having volunteers. Defining volunteering. It's an activity that you do, not get paid for, can be short or long term. It can be in something you're in for 7, 8, 10 years or all your life. But it also can be short, just like doing the neighbour's gardening or going out getting groceries for people. There's actually no time limit in it. A positive benefit, you tend to volunteer for something you believe in and are happy doing. It's a way to give back to the community and enables places to have assistance that they could not have if they'd had to pay for the time. And most of them are mainly non-profit. Seven types of volunteering that I found. You have event-based volunteering, for example, sausage sizzles with the aim of making money that you then donate to an organisation or a person. Board members, this is essential for non-profit organisations to have people of governance capability on their boards. As if they paid board members, that would take the money away from the organisation. And it's amazing how many organisations we have in New Zealand that people don't realise are not-for-profit. Skilled volunteers, for those who have experience in the field of organisation of their particular field. You've got drivers, especially non-profits, to supply drivers to assist people to the hospital. I know the Cancer Society has one. I live in Ohau and Levin now, and there's shuttle buses that come up and down regularly, bringing people for hospital appointments. Then you've got the mentors, and these are the people who have a lot of retired people who have got, use an example, Stuart's very good on computers, so he could mentor people on computers. It's when someone needs mentoring but hasn't got the money to go off and do it. Fund drivers, organisations like Rotary and Lions, the hospice, they all fundraise to provide money to organisations in the community, and that's from playgrounds to sports clubs. Another type of volunteering is advocates. A person who can assist somebody, like if they go for a job interview or if they're in a bit of strife and they need someone with them, who can express their views and wishes, and also especially a lot in interviews. Volunteers enjoy working with others, skills to pass on to others, positive addition to your resume, being involved in the community, and assisting areas of non-profit. Why do people volunteer? It's giving back. Many individuals volunteer to support causes they are passionate about and give back to the community. For example, you may have had a friend or relative who's been unwell, and then you go and help in their agencies, example, cancer, diabetes and heart. So if you know someone, or even yourself, you then may volunteer for something like that. Personal growth. Volunteering offers opportunities for personal development, learning new skills and gaining valuable experience. For example, you might volunteer in something. I've got a friend's daughter who's volunteering at the hospital in the elderly area who thinks she may go nursing. So it's another way of, and it helps with the funding around at the moment. Who can volunteer? Anybody can volunteer. You have informal volunteering, which is doing the gardening or helping somebody, or you've got formal volunteering, which is I'll do a little bit shortly, in, about, especially when you do governance jobs. So this is just to, there's a volunteer role for everyone from helping in the garden to supporting charity organisations or offering professional expertise volunteering. You'll find that if one member of the family volunteers, it can rub upon the other. For example, one of my grandsons, when he was young, we used to go camping a lot, and he always came with us. And every morning, without being told, he'd get a bag and off he'd go and walk up and down the beach collecting rubbish. And there's so many kids out there doing this sort of thing that people don't realise, and they don't see it as volunteering, but it is volunteering, and it's when children start. And he loves it. He comes back with all his rubbish and says, look what I found, look what's been happening on the beach. So that's where he got his joy from volunteering. Now, out of a list of about 300, I'd pick these ones. There's so many different types and places that you can volunteer for. You've got the animal welfare, SPCA. A lot of people volunteer up there looking after the animals. You've got counselling and support services. Not everybody can afford that, so there are volunteer places for that. Public safety, health organisations I've talked about. You've got the youth organisations, sports and music clubs. Majority of the sports, especially the school kids, is all done by volunteers. The Marae, I think you can look at the Marae as the volunteering when Gisborne and Hawke's Bay had all their bad weather. The Marae's opened up and fed thousands of people. Corporate, which I'll deal with, and service groups, which I'll talk about, Rotary. Governance is a formal type. And it's you really need to know the rights when you're a volunteer. You should not be used to fill a position that has belonged to a paid worker. You can only take a volunteer's job. No one can... there's ways of getting around it. You take the job away and then you bring it back a bit later, but it's not right. You should be paid back for any out-of-pocket expenses you're incurred on behalf of the organisation. You should be given training to do your job. Your work environment must be healthy and safe. Your confidential private information must be protected. And you must not be subjected to unlawful discrimination. Right, first one I'm going to talk about is Abbeyfield. I don't know if you all know Abbeyfield, but Abbeyfield is... we've got one in Palmerston North. And it's supportive, affordable and independent supported living for the elderly. We've got just had open one in Manukau, so we've got 15 in the country, and the houses vary in size, with a range currently from 9 residents to 14. Our house has got 12, and we're in the process of raising money to build 2 more rooms on the front. I like to call it senior flatting. The residents do not like it be called a rest home, because it's certainly not a rest home. It is, in our case, 12 people flatting together. And it's an affordable last home, I'll tell you before I start discussing it. The rent there is for 2 weeks is $915, and that includes the house, the rent, the food, and your power. And why I emphasise this is the only reason we can do it that cheaply, because there's only 2 people paid, 3 people, another 3 cooks. The rest of us, myself as the house manager, manage it, and I can be there 1 day or 5 days. It all depends what's going on. Then we've got a committee that Stuart's on, there's 7 of us, and we've got a couple of them who do building, we've got another one who does the gardening, and another one who does finance. So it means that if we had people paying to do all that, that rent wouldn't be like it is. And the people who live in there, majority of them said they say they can do that. All they have to buy is their extras. Most of them save about $60 to $100. Because it's classed as a boarding house, they all get... living alone. And if they've got less than $8,000 in the bank, they can get accommodation allowance. So that's not the only reason people are there. The 3 things that they're there for and they come in for is loneliness, safety, and good food. And John over there is telling me all the places he goes for good food now. So you have a totally different group of people in there, and it's like any family. You can all get on sometimes, or you mightn't get on other times. And my job is to make sure they all get on properly. But I do like to tend, if it's a petty thing, that they sort it out themselves. But it is a... Last Thursday, we had Masterton Abbeyfield come over for a visit. And we were very pleased, weren't we, to say that 2 or 3 of them said, oh, we think we'd like to live here. Your rules are better than ours and your house is better than ours. So that sort of... But it's... I'll just tell a little bit about this. The growing tide of older retirees. In a structurally aged population, many more older people are entering retirement with low liquidity or as renters. A lot of our people have been in a rented house that's sold and they can't afford the new rent. And I don't know if you saw on Stuff today, but they're discussing how terrible it is that all of us people get paid money. By 2048, there'll be 600,000 renters aged 64 and over. And the health of older people is often adversely affected by loneliness and isolation, made worse by their living situations with few fit-for-purpose or affordable options. It's great, the joy I get out of volunteering there is someone who comes in, hasn't eaten for a while, is tiny, and within a year of good food, company, and not being scared of being by herself, totally different people. And we haven't had any changes for over 2 years, because the only time people change is if they die, it dies, or if they have to go, they're not an independent anymore. Within 30, if Abbeyfield houses are a proven affordable option. The 31-year track record in developing and operating housing for capable older people, the Abbeyfield model meets the wellbeing and housing needs of older people, serving those who are lonely or isolated, struggling to maintain a house. Abbeyfield houses help free up both public and private and public sector for other users and contribute to the housing supply. We had one lady come in who was in a four-bedroom state house and she'd been living in that for quite a while. So that gives a family a house, and there's a lot of that around. At current turnover numbers, we estimate over 750 private dwellings will be freed up over 15 years, with an additional 17 houses. Nearly 1,700 dwellings could be freed up. We've actually got a house in Caddicat being built, and we've got about five different places around trying to get them going. Our main problem is we don't get government support. So to build a house, it's a bit like the chicken and the egg. Once you've got the house built, the people renting will pay for it. But you can't build it until you've got the money. So our house here, it was 10 years of fundraising. The council did come up with the section, and the army were in a low time at the time, built the house. So we were lucky. To build a new one now, it's about $4 million. So that's a lot of fundraising. So that's the government assistant bit. And rightio. Now, Strive is my other one that is more a corporate, governance role. So this is quite small. I don't think you've got to read it, so I did write it out. I don't know if people know Strive. Strive is used to be the Stewart Centre, but it's where head injuries and strokes go to rehabilitate, and it's a day, they come for the day. So the values are giving, why I'm telling you this is because of how it's a different from Abbeyfield, where Abbeyfield is, I go in and I just work. This one, you're, I might just actually tell you first the key aspects of governance so you understand what governance, most of you will. But we make we're the decision-making authority. We clarify who has the authority to make decisions on behalf of the organisation and who's responsible. There's accountability, establish who is accountable for the organisation's actions and performance. Ethical conduct ensures that the organisation operate ethically and in compliance with laws and regulations. Framework of values, processes and practices. This includes policies, procedures and systems for the organisation and the oversight and control of the organisation. So it's a totally different kettle of fish there. You're on a board, and by being on the board of a non-profit, it means that they don't have to pay for a full board. And you're there to assist the manager do all those things. But Strive itself has the values of giving support. It's a non-profit organisation. They only get funding from ACC and Ministry for Accidents and Ministry of Health for Strokes. So that's the only funding they get. So any other thing to pay staff and a whole lot of stuff, and they've got rent and all the rest of it, that makes them a non-profit. And now, as a lot of organisations in town are, finding it hard to get funding. It is really, really hard. When I first volunteered, it was easy. You just went to someone and they gave it to you. But now it's very, very difficult. And they're having a lot of problems. Much of that else I've told you about. So the eligibility there is 16 years of age with acquired brain injuries. And the only people they don't have is mental health or intellectual disability because they haven't got the staff. But what we're trying to do there is have qualified staff to look after these people. And it's amazing there too to see them at the end of each year, how well they've progressed, where if they'd been at home, who knows what would have happened to them. Before I get on to the Rotary Club, I just want to read you something out of the Australian Women's Weekly. Don't know why I bought this one, but it was amazing what I found in it. There's a lady in Australia who's 110. And when I read through it, I found they asked her, how come you're as old as you are? And, you know, or how did you manage to get there? And she said, volunteering has always been a big part of my life, and it was during a stint in the library at the Soldiers Memorial Hall that she met her husband, Alan. And she talks about that. And then they were in a farming town, so she joined the Country Women's Association and was active in the local Church of England. Her volunteering expanded to the bowls, tennis, hockey and golf clubs, where she was secretary for 30 years. She played golf right up until her late 80s and was made a life member. Now, of course, she's the oldest life member in the club's history. She still plays competitive bridge, her daughter said. She was never home, she was always out doing. Perhaps this is the secret of her sharp mind. And then when she lived independently till she was 105. But needed a pacemaker inserted due to ventricular standstill, a rare cardiac arrhythmia, which caused her heart to stop beating. Post-surgery, she decided to relocate into Bordertown Hospital's residential care. At the hospital, she still weeds all the grounds and picks the strawberries for the other residents. Her care for others is ever-present. She finds that she looks after everybody there. So I just thought, seeing I was doing this, what I'd shared with that, I thought that was quite amazing. So if you volunteer, you'll live to 110. So Rotary. I heard someone said to me today that our Rotary isn't a voluntary thing. It is. We pay to go there, but then we do the work, the volunteer work. And Rotary's a global network of more than 1 to 2 million neighbours, friends, leaders and problem solvers who see a world where people unite and take action to create lasting change across the globe, in our communities and in ourselves. Our Rotary Club's projects include taking students from a low decile school to the movies and paying for a primary school student to do piano. With this, the primary school student, a group of us do reading every Tuesday at Takaro School. And one of the teachers said, there's a boy here, I think he's about 9 or 10, and he's just started going into the hall and playing the piano. And he was in the hall playing Chopin and all these things that he'd heard. And it's absolutely amazing. So we took it to our club. And we're now paying for his piano lessons. piano teacher said he's never ever come across anything like this. And then the big cheeses of Rotary decided that we had to do something in the community. So we thought, what can we do? So we actually went to another school, another low decile school, who were having trouble with getting the children to school. So for a month, they said, if you're all come to school, you'll go into a draw, and 20 of you will go to the movies. Well, the kids, they had a really good attendance, and they're trying to do it. They can show that they're continuing it every time, every now and then. If you've been good, you'll go in a draw, and we'll do things. So they went to the movies at that new one. What's it called? I don't know what. In Main Street. They had an ice cream, and then they had Freya. She was a netballer. Oh, I can't remember what her name is.
Farah Palmer.
True. Thank you, John. Yeah. She came and talked to them, and they just absolutely loved that. And she said, look, anytime you do things, I'll come and talk to the kids. And she talked to them about, you must go to school. And that was voluntary. So that's one of our big ones when our Rotary Club of Terracine, one of our big things for the year was Relay for Life. And that event's full of community spirit and aims to find a cure for cancer. From toddlers and pushchairs to 90-year-olds, this is a great time to interact for many volunteers. And I picked this one because it was children, and it was a 2-year-old, because it was my grandchild, who went on later to be there walking years later. We did it. How many years we did it? About 12 years. We took the tent down. We stayed for the 24 hours. And in those early days, it was Rotarians who slept at night to keep the running going. So we did the 24 hours. We decorated the tent. We did all the things you do there. But it was the fact that you had a group who did the walking, but you also had the ones who couldn't walk that came for tea that night. And then all the children and grandchildren were there. It was just a great volunteering thing. And if we were tired, the kids would run around for a while. And the whole thing was open to all ages and enabled everyone to blend together. The 2-year-old and his siblings came for many years in the tent, and they stayed the 24 hours. And I can remember one night there was three of us, and by 4 in the morning you've all taken turns and you're starting to talk nonsense. And one of the kids sat up and said, would you people stop talking rubbish, and went back to sleep. And it was just so many things with that. I often look back at that as a really great way of volunteering. And a lot of those kids still volunteer. As time went on and members became older, these young people, along with members of a church group, took over the night walking, so we then could just be during the day. I know that this was the first volunteering by these children, and a number have continued to do so. Rotary also does volunteering with sausage sizzles that the Rotary Club. We've joined another club. They do that up at Bunnings, I think at least monthly. And a lot of that money's gone to Surf Life Saving Club. We've done high teas, and that money, we do it, get paid for it, but that money goes straight off. So that's where the volunteering, it's all volunteering. And Rotary Clubs also do safe driving. We're called on by the community quite a bit to help with organising things like that. I don't know if you know safe driving. It's held at Freiburg School. It's where the children are taught the safe way of driving. And that's all done by Rotary Clubs. All the Rotary Clubs in Palmerston help and assist there. So you've got all of those sort of things. We used to, years ago, do the wine and wine and food at Acacia Birch. One of our... Oh,
Wine and Food Festival.
Yeah, oh, the Wine and Food Festival at the racecourse. Yeah, oh, the other one. Wine and Food Festival at the racecourse. That was great, and that money we, one of the years, I think two of the years, we gave the money to a charity that does packs to go overseas with tents and everything. And the other one I was thinking of was Music and Song when we at Keisha Birch, when one of our members' son was into wine. He wasn't into wine, he worked for a winery, and so they used to get Keisha Birch sorted. They used to have really great singers and opera singers and all sorts down. There was food, and we ran the wine part, and those sales were good as well. So Rotary itself does a lot of fundraising, and we did a lot of we used to do a lot of community work, like a lot of playgrounds around the town. You'll see the Rotary bit. Palmerston North Rotary has the big sing. What is it you do, Stu? That big sing. The singing contest Rotary does, doesn't it? I'm not sure. Yeah, they did a big singing. So there's certainly a lot of things we do. So it is a volunteer thing. The other thing we have a memorial trust that was set up when two Rotarians in our club died, and money was put into a trust. And the interest of that money we give out each year, and that's been given to ballerinas, people going to different sports things. The one I like one was one shepherd girl put in for a new dog, so we bought her a dog. So you can see how things work with Rotary. So I'm a bit early, Stuart, 10 minutes early. See, I'm scared of him, really.
Just keep going.
I've endeavoured to show you that whatever your age, young or old, there is a place for volunteering in your life, and that was Winston Churchill. So that's the joys of Rotary, volunteering. I find it great. Why I volunteer up at Abbeyfield is because I love the concept. The concept is keeping people out of rest homes, it's keeping people out of terrible places. It's also no one's going to be found dead in their bed 2 weeks later. They love it there. They love the fact that we volunteer there because they then get cheaper. But the whole aspect of it, I walked in there one day, and in those days there was a lady who played the piano. She was playing the piano. I'd had not a very nice day, been a really stressful day. Walked in there at lunchtime. She's playing the piano. The others are sitting, waiting for their lunch, and all you can smell is this beautiful smell. And I thought, God, I want to put my name down here. But, I like to see, it's a small organisation. There's us, Gisborne, and Hawke's Bay. They're the only three houses in the country. And it's great to see people come in just after a stroke and not really doing much, but give them a year, and it's totally different. So is that enough filling in? He said I had to talk for 50 minutes. I'm only...
No, you're nearly there.
I'm nearly there.
No, that's all right. Yeah. Pretty good that you kept it. One aspect that you didn't mention, when you're... the volunteers get a lot out of doing things. You're doing a lot of the things you're talking about to support for people who need assistance, as in Abbeyfield and Strive. Mm. But a big aspect of that is the support that's giving the families of those people. Mm. And the, you know, if someone just has an elderly parent, to think where can they put them, yeah. and are they safe and are they living on their own, it can be a big problem. Knowing that there's somewhere where there's people who will know every day, have they got up, are they moving around, and so on. Something very valuable.
But I will, that's just made me think of something. This couple, this girl and her mother came down from New Plymouth, and I went in to meet them, and she said, "Mum wants to come here," and she went on and on and on about it. And I looked at Mum, so I said to one of the residents, "Can you go and show the girl one of the rooms?" And I said to Mum, "Do you want to come here?" And she said, "No." She said, "She's sick of coming up to New Plymouth to see me." She said, "I don't want to come in." I said, "Well, that's fine." So I said, "Look, we haven't got a bed, you know, but if you want to go on the waiting list, you can." I get a call about 10 o'clock the next morning from this cook, and she said, "There's a woman here with a mother in a suitcase who said she could come in today." I said, "I did not say she could come in." But you've made me think of it, quite a few things like that. A lot of it is the family are happy with what that they're there. And some, we've had to have elder abuse in when they weren't visited, and then they weren't coping anymore and they needed to go somewhere. And that sort of thing. But so Stuart is right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Thank you very much for listening.
Yep. Okay, well, yep. Okay. You could have thrown in another aspect also, because as we know, you know, through Rotary and so on, you meet a lot of, I met a lot of elderly people through Rotary.
But you call them senior.
She cares for people who are younger than her, but anyway.
There's four in Abbeyfield younger than me.
Yeah. But often you might find there's couples where one is getting more and more health needs and support needs and so on. And that can often mean that for the other adult in the household, it's a big effort and a big strain and very difficult. Where there are support facilities for these people, one, it can give them respite, but it can also mean that they don't have to do all the 24/7 watching. I know there's a friend of mine whose son thinks he can take care of his mother, bring her over to Melbourne because she's getting dementia. I don't think he realises that soon it'll be 24/7 care.
Yeah.
And so on. If you've got somewhere where they can go, you can have quality contact with them without the stress. But it needs volunteers to get these things going.
And that's the hardest thing, is when someone needs to go because they're not independent anymore. It's hard for us and it's hard for them. But we just work around that. We have all of them have an advocate, and I work with the advocate, and then we work out how we're going to do it. Sometimes the advocate doesn't want to, and usually it's fine, but that is one of the most stressful things, is because they're all so happy there, and it's family's happy, everybody's happy, but there comes a time when safety has to come into it. But saying that, majority of them, we keep people, we think, out of rest homes for years. Yep.
Okay, no, yeah, I don't want to stop you, but we're nearly over time. So,
if you pay up, I'll tell them the big thing I know about you from last week.
Well, I could tell the story myself. We got these instructions. She said that Abbeyfield, that she said, "I am hosting the residents for a morning tea." She didn't say it was the residents from Masterton, so I thought, it's her home down the coast. And she said, "Could you bring ice cream?" So I had a two-hour drive with this ice cream in the car, going all the way to her home and all the way back, and I don't think it melted, but anyway, everyone did enjoy it.
I will say my side of it. There's eight people on the committee, right? Yeah. Where were all the other seven? At Abbeyfield. Yeah. Only one person read it to go to my place.
Yeah. And precisely, one person read it. Yes.
And as somebody said, "We've been to your small house." It's we live on our daughter's land. We bought a little two-bedroom house. I've had the committee there, and they said, "There's no way we thought of it going there, because we thought, where would you put them all in their walkers?" So there we go.
Well, Katrine, being such a good organiser, would naturally have had a big tent up there for everybody. Okay. Tea and coffee and biscuits if you want to write some questions down. We'll reconvene soon. There is a lot more to discuss on this, so don't go away. I think there's a lot we can say about, among other things, one of the people was saying, what about volunteers rather than people from voluntary organisations? And Katrine's a volunteer. Why people do it, what they get out of it. And one of the things is it does keep you active and lively and feel you've got a place and function and so on. But there's lots of opportunities and things that are really well worthwhile, and you meet interesting people. So, okay, we'll have a short break and then reconvene. Right. Before you address the questions you have there, there was one here saying you were very interesting, thanks. Could we have some more of your personal volunteering experience success stories, please? Now, before we go to you, we have Graham here, who I tapped him on the shoulder because he does lots of volunteering as well, and I thought, you know, he could just mention some of the stuff that he does, because there really is a whole broad range of opportunities and things that it gives you. Do you want a couple of minutes, Graham, to just come up and...
This is how you get volunteers, yes.
Yeah. It's called press ganging at another time. All right. Yeah, so over the years I've done quite a bit of it, but I have to say that I'm slowly pulling back. For 34 years I was on the Trust Board at Centrepoint Theatre, and so I've... was part of the process there, plus I was part of the company. I'm a lighting designer as well, so I've spent an awful lot of my years working on the dark side, because most of that work in Centrepoint I do at night time. The other one that I've just managed to... One of the things that you'll find as a volunteer, it's really... Once you become a volunteer for an organisation, getting out of it is not an easy process, all right? I was, until just recently, was also the secretary for the Men's Shed. Now, the Men's Shed is a wonderful organisation. There'd be an awful lot of old guys hovering around the streets in the gutter if it wasn't for places like Men's Shed. It gives guys... Guys are really quite, not very good at communicating. But one of the things that the Shed does is it gets guys to communicate almost by mistake, because guys aren't really good at face-to-face having conversation. But you get two guys working side-by-side on something on a workbench, they talk. They talk about what they're doing, and the conversation changes. And over the years, I watched people develop, get friendships that they would so unlikely would never have happened, but you put people in the right place, situations, and the chemistry works. And I think it's the same with anything, like Abbeyfield's obviously a wonderful situation. I was also, just until recently, the chair of the U3A. Fortunately, that's gone now as well. But I managed to offload that. I mean, it's not that I'm not still involved, but sometimes you end up undertaking more things than you can cope with in a week, and I got myself into that situation. So one of the others that I'm currently involved with, which has some resonance for some of the things that were being talked here, is I'm on the Trust Board at Ryder Cheshire as well, which is another one of these places that this country could not survive without people being prepared to step up and offer their time and their expertise for nothing. And we all owe them a great debt of gratitude. I know I get a lot back from what I do, and I know that like in places like Ryder Cheshire, that they really appreciate the fact that you bring your skills in and you do things for them for nothing. I think it's part of life, that what you've learned and earned in life, that you give back to somebody at the other end. And that's what it's all about. Yeah. Only when they die.
Yes, but how often is that?
There's been three in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
However,
how many actually lived there?
54. Yep. It goes back a fair way. The land goes right back to Casey Birch. But Right of Cheshire is another one of those organisations which it is. We're very reliant on the government funding to support people to come in to be under our care. But a lot of that funding has gone away, just like you're saying. Right of Cheshire is in a little bit of trouble, because if the funding situation doesn't change and we can't get more people in, if we get people in, funding follows them, and that's how the thing works. At the moment, it's in a very stagnant mode and could be in real trouble in a few years if there's not a change in philosophy.
Yeah.
Don't know how you change that. You probably need to get somebody like Donald Trump in power.
It is quite true. Once you're in it, it's very hard to get out of whatever you're doing. Yeah.
But you can find it rewarding at the same time.
Oh, you find it rewarding. But then when you think, well, I mean, when the first one came into Abbeyfield younger than me, I thought, oh, my God. Now there's about four or five who now I have to do things for, and they're quite capable. But I know they're in Abbeyfield and they're old, and I'm the house manager.
Which shows that it keeps you young.
It does. Well, 110. Look at that lady.
That's a question of it.
Well, I tried that. I was in Palmerston North and I up stakes and we went to Ohau to my daughter's farm and built the little house. And these are the three I kept. So my husband said to me one day, he said, this up and down you go to Palmerston North. He said, it's petrol's costing. I said, when the petrol's more than your whiskey, I'll stop. Hasn't said a word since.
Didn't one of your slides say that volunteers should be paid for their expenses?
Oh, incurred. You've got to pay. You've got to buy something first, and then you get it back.
Oh.
One thing when I was looking for this, I've just remembered. I did read that 27% of New Zealanders do volunteer, and they save $4 billion a year across the board because of, especially people on boards, because board members get paid quite well. The ones that get paid. But that's a lot of money saved. Yep. So what have we got here?
Yep.
What do you do to encourage young people to join Rotary as current members opt for Probus? Do you write them? Well, when I first joined Rotary about 20 years ago, all the clubs were big. Now the clubs are all smaller. In those days, I was talking to my husband about this morning. In those days, because I was the second woman in our Rotary Club, because there were still clubs that didn't have women in. And I'd like to say that if women hadn't gone into Rotary, Rotary would have gone by now. In the 60s, 70s, Dad went to work and Mum looked after the children and cooked all the meals, etc. So she's quite happy for him to go out one night a week, and she didn't have to cook him a meal. So it's a totally different thing now. My grandchildren, both partners, both of them have looked after the kids. There's not a him and her, and both cook. In fact, one son-in-law does all the cooking. He comes home, he loves cooking. So I think it's all changed. It was a gentleman, and you had to be invited to join. But those days have gone now. And we get young people, but then they don't stay because it's, plus the cost, and you've got the cost of living now. You've got to pay a lot of, different fees in that goes to Rotary International. So this is on our board, on our mind all the time. You bring people in, but life's changed. I think we used to have JCs and you used to have Round Table. All of those have gone. I think Lions are having the same problem as us. Yeah. So if someone else has got something that they could think would help, I'd love to hear. Do you have a range of places Abbeyfield residents go to when they need to move to care, and is the aspect of volunteering involved? No, because Abbeyfield's independent living, that means independent living. If they need any extra, their advocate or family do. We look after them, provide their shelter, if say, and feed them and provide their power. Any other thing, if they can't do, like as they're getting older, if they need showers, well, district nursing comes in for that. Our cooks are only there from 9:30 to 3:30. After that, they look after themselves. So when it's time to move on, that's when we bring the family in to go out and find places for them. We don't, and they go to, mainly to rest homes, because by the time they leave us, that they're into rest home care. Yep.
The question, yeah, what is the physical setup at Abbeyfield?
Yep. It's a purposeful building, and you've got in the centre, you've got a nice big lounge, dining room and kitchen, and then we've got two wings off, and each of those is a separate room with an ensuite, and then they've got a door to the outside. When Masterton came up, they were very impressed with ours, because they don't have doors to the outside. The fire department love it, because in our fire plan, they go outside their door, especially if it's night. And the other thing, it's you can see everywhere. Some of the new ones being built are like rabbit warrens. You go down a corridor and you get three, and you go another corridor and you get three. We know where they all are. And,
And each unit has its own sort of veranda. All but one have a sort of veranda area that they can sit outside.
Yeah, and they have a little kitchen unit, but they're not allowed. They can only have a jug in it. They go to the main kitchen if they want to toast and things, because of three Abbeyfields have had fires in the rooms from irons and...
Yes. Have you ever been asked to give a hand out as a volunteer?
A handout.
You know, to volunteer for something, but when you looked at what was involved, you thought, that's not for me.
No, most volunteering I've looked into before I volunteer. I've found out what it's about. And the only reason I've left is, well, now, it was 2 years ago I moved, and I had too much on my plate, much like you said. So I thought, no, I can strive only twice is 2 monthly. And it's on the same night as Rotary, so they fit in together. And Abbeyfield's the one I come to the most.
So were you proactive in finding these places to volunteer, or were you shoulder-tapped?
Abbeyfield, I don't know if you know Stuart Davies, I'll say his name. He was a policeman and I was in charge of A&E for many years, and we worked together to get the helicopter pad, do the fundraising. And then over the years, he'd get on something, or I'd get on something, we'd make the other join. So he rang me up, it must be nearly 8-9 years ago, and said, I've got just the job for you. He said, I'm going in as chairman, but you're coming in as the house manager. So I went up and had a good look around and found about it, and straight away, I liked the concept. I love the concept of it. He has since left quite a while ago. But I said, well, I'll stay as long as you stay. But when he left, I stayed on because I do like the concept. I think it's a wonderful concept for elderly. Seniors. I try not to say elderly. None of us are elderly. We're seniors. Yes.
I'm still not clear. Give me a clue of how your day goes. Do they get provided breakfast and then midday dinner and get their own evening meal?
No. They get up. They can come and go as they like. Breakfast is all provided, but they get it themselves. It's all in. They've got a cupboard with everything in it, from baked beans to cereals, all the rest of it. And there's fruit there.
So do they have a microwave and a toaster and a hot water jug or something like that?
They've got a hot water jug in their room, but in the dining room they've got a microwave and a toaster in the dining room. Because having things like that in the room is against the fire restrictions. So they get themselves up, make their own breakfast, and then the only run rule about the kitchen, once the cook gets there at 9:30 till 3:30, they should stay out of the kitchen. She comes in and cooks them a hot meal and dessert, and then leaves things out for tea for them to heat in the microwave. And it may be soup in winter in a crock pot, or bacon egg pie that they just...
So they come back and help themselves for the evening meal?
Yep. Mm. No, no, we supply it all. They only use the toaster. We supply the bread and the butter and everything.
Yeah, but it's a toaster, they have to bring it down.
No, we've got a toaster. They use the toaster in the kitchen.
Okay.
It's a communal
kitchen. Yeah, one part of when people come in, we try to get them to always have lunch together if they can, and it's not a rule, but we try to encourage that. And there's a few that come for breakfast together and tea together, others just come when they want.
Lunch is at 12:30, and if you're there cooking the meal, they're all sitting down at 12:30 waiting for the food.
When we had a bit of a break with cooks having problems with cooks, so Stuart and myself were sharing the cooking, and I went in one day. I don't know what I did for them. They said, "Oh, Stuart's was much better yesterday. You want to see what he does for us?" And I said, "Well, he's going over the top." Yep.
Two questions: do you have a registered nurse, and what about night staff?
No, that's why it's independent living. So if you can't look after yourself, you can't be there. Majority of them will have things around the neck, stresses, and the ambulance has all our room numbers and can get into all our rooms and can get into the locked door.
Yeah.
And then they have a little life tube in their fridge with all the details on.
Yeah, so if there's outside support, thing like I think Katrine mentioned, if they need showers and that sort of, so someone comes in, that's fine. But Abbeyfield does not provide that themselves. But they're free to use whatever facilities are available more generally.
The staff have to get first aid in case there's a cut or something like that. They have to do the first aid. But that's what's the difference, is we've had some people have an operation and we're quite happy for a night or two, one of their relatives wants to come and sleep in their room, that's fine. But in general, there's no one there from 3:30.
Night staff?
No, it's just, I call it senior fleeting.
Yeah. What you have to remember as well is that it is a community. Everybody knows everybody else there, and if someone hasn't come out that day, then everyone else knows that, and they'll knock on the door and make sure the person's okay.
I always check. If someone's not out by 10:00, I check to make sure. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. We used to call it a waiting list. They come in and have a look around, and then they meet the residents, and then if they're still interested, they fill a form in and we interview them. And then they go, I don't like to call it a waiting list because sometimes it can be 2 or 3 years. And then we have, at the moment we've got three set, all done with their doctor's stuff all done, but probably 20 in a folder that they've shown an interest. And I mean, I can you every now and then I update that. Sometimes you find they've got something else because it's so long a wait. And then they come in and have a meal with everybody. And the one on top of our list at the moment is a woman who's house sitting in England at the moment, and she wants to continue doing that as long as she can, that sort of thing. But she wants to have a base, so she is going to make Abbeyfield her base, and she'll continue house sitting around the country. And but I only keep three on it because, as I said, we've had no changes for 2 years. And everyone still looks healthy. No.
In fact, some seem to put on a fair bit of weight.
Oh, you want to see the meal? They put on weight, all right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's less than the super because they get to, all of them get living alone, and if, as I said, under 8,000, they get accommodation allowance. So some of them are getting about 1,200, and it's 915 a fortnight. So they've, and that's with, and the one bugbear, you know what I'm saying. We pay the power and they get the power money. And I have suggested that they give it to us, but no, it's ours, it comes to us. So.
You say there's other AMB theatres around the country. Is there a head office?
Yep, head office is in Nelson, okay. And I'm on the board of Abbeyfield New Zealand. Yeah. And the only reason I went on the board was I was put on by our friend Stuart, Stuart Davies, because having someone on the board, you get to know more about what's happening. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. And there's also an Abbeyfield Properties that oversees all the property sites. Yeah. So with any of these organisations, one big problem that you've heard through this series is the problem of the governance of all these voluntary organisations. And so to have, although each Abbeyfield is essentially is in a sense independent, to have these umbrella bodies that have the expertise, or a place you can go with all the shared experience of the different homes, it does actually make it easier. And in fact, the first talk we had, they were saying some groups probably to sort of amalgamate in terms of administration with registration and funding and so on might be helpful, and then they could operate independently under that umbrella, which can rationalise the things. But the other aspect is, if any of you are retired but you have expertise in treasurer, secretary, that sort of thing, there's a phenomenal need for that. And it can take half a day, a month for something like that, but extremely useful, and you meet interesting people.
We do need a treasurer if anyone's interested,
and fundraisers.
Oh, and fundraisers. Anyone here really good at fundraising? We need one of those to build our two rooms. Yes?
Do you have to be over 65? And what's the actual range of ages that you actually have there?
Yeah. You're best to be over 65 because it works with your pension. We've had someone on ACC that was difficult because they don't get as much money as the pension, but he gets a lower rent because he does all the gardens and the lawns. But apart from that, there's no... No.
How old
would be the oldest and youngest resident that you have there now, approximately?
The youngest is the 64-year-old. He's nearly the... our oldest is 91. Masterton, they've got three, and I just have to tell you one quick story about one of these. She's 94. The police rang her the other day and said, your car's been stolen and it's smashed. So she went in... And I said, well, how are you getting around now? She said, I went out and bought one the next day. So she's back driving at 94. She said, I have to keep my licence.
You're listening to Manawatū People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatū, and you've just been listening to a recording that we made of one of the U3A talks, hosted at the Palmerston North City Library by the University of the Third Age. If you'd like to hear this again or share it with a friend, you can find a podcast version of this talk at npr.nz/show/U3A Talks. If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.